It's one of the most iconic moments in the history of golf. The Locale, the 18th hole on the stadium course at the Players' Championship. The opponent had won 10 of his previous 16 starts. The golf world was looking for someone who could tame a tiger.
Be the right club.
And with a 6-iron from 179, the moment was born.
Be the right club.
Welcome to the Be the Right Club Today podcast, presented by Makefield Putters.
Be the right club today.
Now, here are your hosts, Hal Sutton and Mark Greenhouse.
Welcome into the Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhouse here with you. October 8th, a Wednesday evening. Hal, how's it going?
It's good, Mark. I'm just at the golf course having a good time today.
Nice. It's always fun to be at the golf course. You know, we're going to start our usual recap of what happened on the various major tours in the world of golf. So I'm going to kick it off with the PGA Tour. And Stephen Fisk fired an 8-under-64 Sunday at the Sanderson Farms Championship, including 4 birdies in his last 5 holes and 3 in a row to close out his day. He becomes the 4th rookie on tour to win this season, along with William Mao, who won the ISCO Championship, Aldrich Pottinger, who won the Rocket Classic, and Carl Phillips, who won the Puerto Rico Open. And Fisk, get this, Hal, he made almost 145 feet worth of putts in the final round and was number one in strokes gained total, but he was just 13th in strokes gained putting. So that's an interesting dynamic. We usually talk about our Makefield putters. I'm going to get to that in a second. But usually you see the guy that leads in putting a lot of times is the winner. But he was tied for 13th.
That means he's a good ball striker, I would assume.
Yeah, so if he was leading the field in strokes gained total, that shows you how the rest of the game was panning out, right?
Yeah, that 140-foot of putts is a good number. We see that a lot out of the winter, making a lot of putts, you know.
Yeah, so that brings us to our sponsor, Makefield Putters, made in the USA. They have that radial cusp technology that helps you find the equator of that golf ball, gets that thing rolling, reduces the amount of skid that the ball has coming off the putter, which means it gets online quicker. They've got their 3-weight system, as I always talk about. Hal, I've never asked you, how are your weights set up? Mine are set up on the toe a little heavier, so I don't pull it as much.
Mine are set up equal all the way across. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is a great putter, but it's still up to us to make the putt. And, you know, it'll get it online quickly if you pick the right line. So there's still the human error involved in it, but they've taken all of the elements that they can get rid of. They got rid of them at Makefield.
Well, and I don't think I've ever asked you this question because I think I'm more of a straight back, straight through putter. What are you? Are you straight back, straight through, or are you kind of inside to inside?
Tiny bit inside to inside, but not much. And, you know, I've spent my whole life trying to take it straight back, straight through. You know, I was one of these guys that would put the tees down in the green, you know, and try to keep the putter inside the tees all the time. So, you know, I was pretty primitive. You know, I'm from the age group, the vintage that we did primitive things as reminders, you know, like the tees in the green, you know.
That's true. Well, nowadays you can go to Makefield Putters. You can get fit for a Makefield putter. You can find out what style, what shaft type, grip type, what length, where the weights all go. So make sure that you go out to makefieldgolf.com and check all of that out. Any idea what your best putting performance was when you won a golf tournament? Does one jump to mind for you?
Well, every time I won, I putted pretty good. Here, I was never known as a great putter by any means, but I made the putts I needed to make. Didn't miss any short ones that kept me from winning a golf tournament. You know, most of the time, I considered if I didn't miss anything that I should have made as a successful putting week. You know, it's funny. I read all the stats that are available to guys today. Never thought about how many feet of putts I made in a round. You know, that was, you know, here, I would think if I made a 20 or 25 footer, or if I made some off the wall putt of 60 feet or whatever else, you know, that stood out in my mind. But, you know, I didn't add up how many feet of putts. Sometimes I might have added up how many feet I missed. You know, that number was pretty big.
Right. Well, I always, you know, I always remind people, especially amateurs, you know, and even aspiring professionals that I've caddied for or worked with. I mean, you look at all the stats and the statistics that we have now around putting, and man, you take the best players in the world on the best greens in the world, and they're making a 10 footer maybe 50% of the time. And so if you hit it 10 feet from the hole, just think the best players in the world are only making it 50% of the time. So if you're not, you know, in that top 100 in the world, maybe you should consider and lower your expectations, and that might help you out a little bit. That might help you gain some confidence in a putting.
Well, something from my past, you know, my rookie year on tour, I would look at the paper on Monday morning when they put in how much we got paid for our finish. And I would think about that last 6 footer that I missed or whatever. And it cost me at that time, you know, $1,000, not $100,000. And, right. You know, I decided, you know, I need to look at this differently. The last putt that I made, you know, that 8 footer or 10 footer or whatever, look how much it made me to make that putt. And that whole line of thinking changed the way I played golf.
Good advice. Good advice. All right. Over on the DP World Tour, good old Bobby McIntyre handled the weather and the field to claim a 4-shot win in the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship over fellow Ryder Cupper Tyrrell Hatton. The event did get shortened to 54 holes because of weather on Saturday. And McIntyre had only one bogey each day, which to me, Hal, is impressive as you can get in any Links golf course, especially with the wind and the weather that they had over there. So that begs the question I asked you about putting. What's the best round that you ever remember having on tour that was in bad weather?
Well, I've thought about it. I can't remember exactly, to be honest with you. But I remember playing in a lot of bad weather, but I don't remember any great rounds coming out of the weather. Tough conditions when it's raining and it's windy. And, you know, patience is what a guy needs to finish that kind of round. You know, the one thing that surprised me about this is that they actually had to call it after 54 holes. I didn't think you couldn't finish on a links style golf course. I didn't know that, you know, the rain would keep you from finishing over there. Seemed like they always had us going on.
Right. So with that said, what weather bothered your game the most? I mean, I know you were probably pretty solid in wind, but what did you not like playing in? Was it rain, wind, hot, or cold?
Rain. Not my favorite, yeah. You know.
No.
It's a hard work for the caddy to try to keep things dry, keep a towel dry where you can, and, you know, it throws your timing off on everything on your, you know, with the, he's holding the umbrella over the ball or whatever else, you know, you feel like you're rushing more in that environment.
Yeah, I think I was bothered more by wind because unlike you, I was a high ball player, still am a high ball player, and the wind tended to bother me a lot. And it wasn't as much the left to right winds as it was the down and the into the wind, because I would always hit it, you know, way too far into the wind for some reason. I don't know why. You hit a good shot, sometimes the wind doesn't touch it. And when my ball's going that high, I'm trying to take, you know, yards off, and I catch one really, you dead square, and next thing you know, it's just going right through the wind and not touching anything. So wind was always my problem.
So Mark, I was always, you know, I love the wind. I'd wake up in the morning, see the wind blowing, and I'd like, oh yeah, I like today. But I hated the rain. That's what I didn't enjoy. But you know, downwind and against the wind used to be harder than it is now, because there was a lot more spin on the ball in the old days. Now the ball spins a lot less, so you don't have as much to think about. Ball won't curve. That would be one thing I'd suggest to the USGA and the RNA. If they want to change the game and make it more exciting and more fun to play, put spin back on the ball.
There you go. Well, speaking of wind, the LPGA had the Lottie Championship presented by Hokule, and that was won by Yumin Huang, making it 26 different winners on the LPGA Tour as she gets the W in Hawaii. She was offered immediate LPGA Tour membership as part of her non-member victory over there in Hawaii, but she has elected to defer that membership to the 2026 LPGA Tour season and will compete as a rookie next year. Good choice. Because of that deference, she's not considered to be a Rolex first-time winner in 2025. But yeah, 26 different winners on the LPGA Tour. To me, that's just crazy. Nobody's doubled up.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. Congratulations to her for winning and getting her card next year. But that's pretty amazing, 26 different winners.
Yes. Korn Ferry Tour, Adrien Dumont de Chassart won the Compliance Solutions Championship, becoming the eighth player of the 2025 season to earn a tour-bound declaration. He moves to number six on the points list, securing one of those elusive 20 PGA Tour cards available through the points list. He was, get this, Hal, 33 under par, including a pair of 61s to start the event. So, Hal, 132 is pretty low. Do you have any idea what your best back-to-back scores on tour were? I mean, 61 is incredible.
Well, Mark, I don't remember. I was pretty low in Phoenix when I won there. I think I shot 64-64, but I'm not sure. That's been a long time ago. You're asking me these questions. Maybe I should do a little research so I know the answer.
I'm going to have to start pulling up all your stats from the history annals to see what you did. But yeah, I mean, man, you think on tour, 64-64 sounds pretty good to me, but 61-61, oh, my goodness. Yeah. We're going to get to that later about the guys on the Korn Ferry Tour. Maybe shooting those low scores doesn't help them when they get promoted. But I'm going to ask you that later on. Get your thoughts on that. On PGA Tour champions, Tommy Two Gloves Gainey goes from Monday qualifier to champion at the Constellation Furyk and Friends. This was only his fifth start, and he became the youngest to win on tour this year, which I guess, I don't know, that's not a great stat on the Champions Tour because you got to be 50 to get on that thing. But he did come from four back, matching the biggest gap of the year on tour. So here we are again, Hal, with another guy who didn't get a whole lot done when he was on the PGA Tour. But in his fifth start on the Champions Tour, Tommy Two Gloves gets a W.
Sometimes, you know, they're looking forward to the excitement of being the youngest guy out there. And a lot of guys go out there and do really well to begin with because they're the youngest guy out there, you know. So, and there's a lot of guys that didn't have a lot of success on the regular tour, excuse me, that see this as their opportunity to succeed. And, you know, the guys that had a lot of success are not as driven to try to perform at that same high level.
Now, I know you said you didn't like playing in the rain. When it rained, did you ever wear two gloves like Tommy does? He wears them all the time.
I never did wear two gloves.
No. I've tried it. I've actually done it more when it's been raining and cold because I don't like being cold. The rain doesn't bother me, but I've tried to do it when I was cold, and I've done okay with it. It's a much different feeling. It takes a little bit out of the feel out of it, but man, when I'm that cold, I don't really think feel is a thing I'm worried about at that point, so.
Yeah, cold never was a positive thing for me either. I was a warm weather player, which is where the tour's at most of the time. They're chasing the sun.
That is true. Well, that wraps up our recap of what happened on all the major tours last week. When we come back, we're going to check in on a topic of the week, which has a little bit of a twofold. We're going to get your thoughts on the Ryder Cup, and we're going to talk about making the show. So stick around for that. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh, this is the Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters.
Hi, I'm Hal Sutton. 25 years ago, I had the right club at the right moment, and it made a huge difference. Today, I've teamed up with Makefield Putters. I now use the right putter today. You see, Makefield has unique radial cusp technology. The ball releases faster off the face and keeps the ball rolling more on its axis. The result is a straighter putt, more on target. When you get everything just right, the putter that fits you just right, the one that you believe in, your confidence should be oozing out of you. So I would encourage all consumers, go to the Makefeel website and educate yourself and get fitted correctly, get the right putter in your hand, and there's hope for better putting ahead.
Welcome back to Be the Right Club Today, presented by Makefeel Putters.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefeel Putters. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh, time for our topic of the week. And Hal, I know you weren't on last week. I had Todd Burrell joining me, and Todd's going to be joining going forward. We might even have Todd come on with you once in a while. But for the most part, we talked Ryder Cup, but I want to get your thoughts on a couple of things that we saw happen at the Ryder Cup in a 15-13 European win. I want to start with the crowds. And do you think the crowds have gotten out of control everywhere, or is this just seem to be in certain places in the U.S. where crowds are out of control at golf tournaments?
Well, I don't know whether they're out of control everywhere. I know they were out of control this last week. I hate to venture out there and take a strong stance, but as an American, I was a little embarrassed about the way everybody acted. And, I kind of agree with Tom Watson with what he had to say. This is a gentleman's game. It's meant to be a friendly, fellowship competition, basically. And it got anything but that with the crowd. Now, I don't know exactly what it was like for the players. It didn't seem like it was out of control with the players between each other. So, but I think, and I don't know what it's like in all the rest of the competitions in different parts of the world, the first one that I played in 1985 at the Belfry, it was pretty low key. You're playing against another country. I mean, there is ole, ole, ole. That's been going on forever.
Right.
So, but not out of hand like this, not calling people ugly names and throwing beer on people. That's uncalled for.
I almost feel like, Hal, that there was, that we were hyping up this ruckus New York crowd. And I felt like that when we weren't winning and we were really getting blown out, that I felt like that the New Yorkers didn't really have any chance to get rowdy and get behind their team. And I almost felt like that they almost had this aura or this need to become rowdy, and they didn't have the chance. So they, instead of really getting rowdy behind supporting their team, they got ugly because they were getting blown out. That's really where I felt this all came from, is that they had a reputation to uphold, and they went after it, but they went after it in the completely wrong direction.
Well, I don't know. I'll have a couple of comments on this whole thing. To me, the PGA of America should have come out and say, we don't condone this sort of, behavior. And I know this as a parent, if I didn't do something like that, that meant I did condone it.
Right.
So, I'm going to say that. And then the other thing is, that was not the Beth Page that I know.
Right.
The Beth Page that I know was long and hard. They cut the rough. They played it shorter. I don't know who made all those decisions, if it was Keegan or who it was, but that's the longest, hardest golf course in the world almost. So we didn't see any of that. Well, they couldn't have shot that many under par on the golf course that I know.
Right. And I get the first hole, right? Because you have to put up the mega stands on the first hole. There's nowhere to put those. So they used an up tee box, but I'm with you everywhere else. There's no reason why you couldn't play tips and tip that thing out on all the other holes on that golf course. And it just didn't make sense to me either. And cutting the rough down, I think when you, I don't know, we seem to be of the impression that because we have the quote unquote longer hitters that we need to cut the rough down. But don't you think it's the other way around, that like if they are trying to hit it out there with us and they hit it in the rough, we're going to be further. We got the shorter club in. You would think it would be easier in that sense. I don't know. I think we look at it the wrong way.
Well, that's one way to look at it. But if you look at all the major championships and they play them as hard as they can play them, you know, a whole lot of the American players are up there on top of the leaderboard.
Yeah.
So I would have preferred to see it the Beth Page that I've been talking about.
So that begs the other question, is that for me, why does it always seem like we as a team are looking at either too much data or not enough data? And my point from this one is that the Europeans were smiling because day one, you know, first set of matches in the foursomes, both mornings, we roll out the Harris English Colin Morikawa that the analytics say of 132 possible combinations, that was number 132. It was the worst possible combination of two players on the team that you could put out. They got smoked the first day and we put them out the second day. And it's like, we weren't looking at analytics, obviously, because I don't think we put them out if that's the case. But, you know, to your point, I've heard you talk about personalities and all kinds of different factors. Do we need to have a happy medium between how we feel and what we see versus the data?
Well, that's a great question. And I'm sure, Mark, everybody would like to find the correct answer for that. But having been in that position of trying to figure that out, tough to do, you know. I always thought sending out your best team first was pretty important. I mean, you know, a lot of people didn't agree with what I did, but Tiger was number one in the world and Phil was number three in the world. So I said, okay, we're going to send out the two best players we got and try to send a message. And the counter side of that is if you get beat, you sent the wrong message, I guess. Your best players got beat. But, you know, one of the things about, you know, what an incredible comeback that was, but that didn't surprise me. If you go back and look at the way they play golf, they play their best players all four matches. So those guys were tired. All of them lost on Sunday. They did the same thing in 99. So, you know, they didn't even play three players until the singles matches in 99. Well, that sets up for a big comeback. Because your best players are tired, and they were on Sunday this last year. They just had such a big lead they couldn't lose.
Yeah, you know, always say, I think if you're within three or four points as the U.S. side, you feel good. If you're up, you feel even better. So that's certainly something to consider. And I guess the last question is, you know, should this task force remain? Because to me, I don't see the success out of it that we've been looking for. And I don't really, you know, again, when we start talking the future of captains, we like to see a guy be a President's Cup captain and then a Ryder Cup captain these days, at least with the task force. So are they basically telling us that Brant Snedeker is going to be the President's Cup captain and the Ryder Cup captain?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this task force either, you know. I think we're putting so much pressure on ourselves trying to figure out the right way to do this that, you know, everybody's anticipating and expectations are high. Everybody's second guessing every decision that's made. And I mean, you know, I know that Keegan Bradley is probably feeling like he failed entirely and he put everything he had into it. And, you know, because the world makes him feel that way. And, you know, I said in the beginning that if I'd have been Keegan Bradley, I would not have captained. I would have played. every other captain in the world would have picked Keegan Bradley. I'm just going to guarantee you that. And he's the only one that wouldn't have picked Keegan Bradley. And if you play, you only have to think about one player. If you're captain, you have to think about everybody.
Well, you know, Todd and I last week talked about who we really felt like needed to be the next captain. And I know Freddie has said that he thinks it's passed him by or they're not going to pick him. But I mean, with the success that Freddie Couples has had in the President's Cup, And it just seems like that guys would run through a wall for Freddie. And I don't know if you, how well you know Freddie or not, but if you've got his phone number, tell him to text him and tell him that to get his name back on that list, because I think there's a movement starting to get Freddie out there as the captain, because he just seems to understand, I think, what we've been talking about. He seems to understand a little bit of the analytics and a little bit about, you know, having a feel for who to put together.
Well, I don't know if it's that detailed or not, to be honest with you. I think it's a matter of who's hitting the shot in the fairway, who's hitting it on the green, and who's making the putt. I think there's too much thought going into everything. But
I think that's where Freddie comes into play. I think he's just relaxed enough, to your point, to just kind of see the numbers, understand the numbers, but then let his eyes have the input into this thing. Like, what am I seeing? What am I feeling? I think to your point, I think that we need somebody that, like I said, I think we either do it one way or the other. And I feel like Keegan went with the feel part of it. I think Zach Johnson went with the numbers part of it, and it didn't work out in either sense, especially in the team side of it. Like you said, the singles, to me, I think we're going to win the singles 9 out of 10 times that we play it.
Well, what I saw the first 2 days was the Europeans made all their putts and the Americans missed them all.
Well, yeah.
And you're not going to win like that. I'm just going to tell you, you're not going to win like that.
But do you think that they make putts because of who they're playing with? I mean, a classic example of this is Justin Rose on Saturday. His strokes gained putting in his match with a partner was plus 4.56, which was 3 strokes higher than I think anybody else at any point during the matches. But he turns around on Sunday and he was like a minus 1.5. So you're talking a 6-shot swing without a partner.
So, Mark, you played a lot of golf in your life. Right. One day you got it with a putter and one day you don't have it with a putter. Yeah. You know, and I mean, then you put the pressure of the Ryder Cup and the whole world watching you and everything else. Let me tell you something. If you could feel your grip when there's that much pressure riding on it, some days you can grip it light enough and some days you can't.
Well, that's going to take us into the other part of our topic of the week, the making the show topic. And I mentioned it earlier. What are your thoughts on why it seems like that the majority of the guys that get the promotions from the Korn Ferry Tour, we know these days it's 20. And, you know, back in the day, there was a massive Q school that you had to go through, which was probably about as hard as any sport to get to the top level, going through the old Q school and the 6 final rounds, I think it was, to get your tour card. Why do you think that the jump doesn't seem to work out for so many players and they don't seem to be able to retain their card? Point being, I had a guy that I went to Clemson with. Matter of fact, he's the one that helped me walk on, Kevin Johnson. And at one point, a couple of years ago, he was, you know, tied for the lead in most victories on the Korn Ferry Tour. But every time that he got promoted to the PGA Tour, he did not retain his card. So the ability to win on the Korn Ferry Tour, and that doesn't translate into being able to play well enough to even retain your card, let alone win. I mean, there are obviously some great examples of guys that have done it, but the majority don't seem to do it. Do you feel like that there's anything that you can point to? Is it just that hard?
Well, I used to believe that some people just didn't really ever see themselves as belonging there. And, you know, it had nothing to do with talent. You know, I can tell you this, whenever I was playing, you know, when Jack Nicklaus or Lee Trevino walked out on the practice range, there was a different elevation as far as the crowd was concerned. You knew somebody important just walked on the tee. And when you have that kind of feeling, you know, it kind of, to someone that has never really viewed themselves as someone that should be there, they just have a hard time elevating their thinking that they actually belong. So that sometimes takes a while before they garner up enough confidence that, hey, I belong and I can beat these guys. Mm-hmm. And, You know, they're still trying to convince themselves that they can. And a lot of times, talent doesn't separate that. It's an inner belief.
Well, with that said, you know, guys now get a $500,000 to start their career on the PGA Tour. Do you think that makes it easier or harder that they're just given the money? Obviously, it helps from an expense standpoint, but you got to start, you got to make over $500,000 to actually start making some more money. Does that raise the level of expectation of these guys and maybe potentially make it harder?
Well, I can tell you, I still remember the first check I ever made. So, you know, and I felt like I earned it. You know, I'm wondering if they feel like they earned the $500,000 that they get, you know, and I mean, that's great. And I didn't have anybody footing my bill,
right?
You know, I mean, I knew, heck, I missed a few cuts to begin with. I was in the hole to start with. I was fortunate. I came up, my dad had enough money that he was able to help me get started. But, you know, I borrowed $18,000 from my dad and I said, I think I can make it for 18, for 6 months on $18,000 if I drive. Mm-hmm. There you go, right there. Try $18,000. You can't make it a week. I mean, I don't know what it is really, but
probably
it changed a lot. We were paying for $72,000 first prize in a few of them, yeah. 54,000 in some of them.
Right.
I mean, now last place is 54,000. Not really. Some of them it is.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. And it's, you know, I mean, you got to pay the caddy, you got to travel, you got to stay, you got to practice, you got to eat, you got to do all this stuff. And, you know, nothing's getting any cheaper. And, you know, it's got to be, you know, I mean, Justin Rose is a great, we were talking about Justin Rose earlier. Justin Rose is a great example of that. I mean, he missed his first 20 something cuts as a professional. I mean, that's got to start wearing on you.
Going back to what I just said, $18,000, you miss a few cuts, I got a lot less money. You start to worry about, okay, I got to make a cut. I got to make some income. You know, you got $500,000 in the bank, different story. You got, I can, you know, I can make it next month if I don't make any cuts. You know, there's no cut anymore.
Well, and I think too, what makes it harder these days, and that's going to kind of roll into my next couple of questions, is that a lot of these guys that those 20, I mean, there's a reshuffle that goes on, and that reshuffle isn't just with them. There's a lot of exemptions on the PGA Tour. We're talking about in 2026 where field sizes are going to change. So again, you know, I don't know when you were playing or what kind of exemptions you ever had to use, but I just went out the other day and looked, and there are 49 exemption categories for the PGA Tour. And those guys that get the 20 tour cards, I want to say are about halfway down the list. So there's a lot of times, and obviously they're not getting in the signature events. So they're not getting in those captive events where you're having, you know, some no cuts or, you know, or most of the field is making a cut in those when there are some in like Tiger's and Jack's and Arnie's events. But, you know, so they're not able to make the money or the points in those events to make it easier. But there's a lot of, a lot less opportunity coming up in 2026 for guys to play as we drop the field size. So number one, do you think there are too many exemptions on the PGA Tour?
So I'm going to say it this way. They've made it too hard for a guy to break out. And I think that's what you're saying and are getting it. And I would agree. You know, the Champions Tour did away with the qualifying school, you know, and, you know, to me, everybody loves a dark horse, you know, and that guy that gets out there that, he's waited till he's 50 years old. He's waited for his chance and he's been planning on it and nobody knows who he is. And he jumps out there and wins a golf tournament. You know, Tommy Two Gloves, for instance, I mean, he played the tour. He won a tournament or two. I don't know how many he won, but he would have been considered a dark horse compared to some of the other guys that were in it. And, you know, everybody likes to see David beat Goliath.
I think people like a story, right? It seems like we're at the ends of the spectrum. Like people like to see somebody dominate because you can either like or hate the dominating person, right? You can either root for them or root against them. That makes it really easy. But at the same time, to your point, I mean, a couple of years ago, you know, we in the PGA Championship, and I'm losing his name off the top of my head, you know, he top 10'd and you know, he got a hole in one on the last day, and I mean, just made a name for himself because people were pulling for him because he is a PGA professional. Those guys generally don't make the cut in the PGA Championship. And here's a dude that's playing in the last couple of groups on a Sunday afternoon, and the fans loved it.
Yeah, like I said, people love to see David beat Goliath. And, you know, that's kind of where I was at whenever I beat Tiger in 2000, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody expected him to beat me, you know. And, you know, the fans, I mean, we got in the van on Monday morning to go out and finish the round, and Tiger sat behind me, grabbed me on the shoulders, and he said, "Man, I can't believe how many rednecks there are here, and they're all pulling for you."
I love that.
Oh, man.
So, anyway, when we come back, we're going to touch on this week in golf. So stick around to the Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Hal Sutton. 25 years ago, I had the right club at the right moment, and it made a huge difference. Today, I've teamed up with Makefield Putters. I now use the right putter today. You see, Makefield has unique radial cusp technology. The ball releases faster off the face and keeps the ball rolling more on its axis. The result is a straighter putt, more on target. When you get everything just right, the putter that fits you just right, the one that you believe in, your confidence should be oozing out of you. So I would encourage all consumers, go to the Makefield website and educate yourself and get fitted correctly, get the right putter in your hand, and there's hope for better putting ahead.
Welcome back to Be the Right Club Today, presented by Makefield Putters.
All right, we're back on Be the Right Club Today podcast presented by Makefield Putters. Hal Sutton, Mark Greenhalgh, and this week in golf, we have on the PGA Tour the Bay Current Classic in Japan. Nico Echevarria outdueled Justin Thomas to win last year. Echevarria had a decent year making the playoffs and pulling down $2.2 million in earnings. He is 18th in the fall points right now. He has to crack the top 10, Hal, to get into those signature events that we were just talking about a few minutes ago. On the DP World Tour, the Open de España, presented by Madrid, won last year by Angel Hidalgo, beating none other than Spaniard Jon Rahm in a playoff. Angel is not having a great follow-up year after the win, but he has played better more recently, with a third-place finish in the Irish Open won by Rory McIlroy. He sits 79th on the points list on the DP World Tour. On the LPGA Tour, the Shanghai native Ryoning Yin earned her fourth career victory in dominating fashion at the Buick LPGA Shanghai, and she shattered the 72-hole scoring record that was first set in 2019 by Danielle Kang. Yin has not won in 2025, and she sits 31st in the points. On the Korn Ferry Tour, the grand finale is the Tour Championship presented by United Leasing and Financing, won by Braden Thornberry last year. And again, to our point, Hal, Thornberry has struggled on the big tour this year. So the guy that got his card by winning the Tour Championship last year has only made 6 of 22 cuts and had one top 10 finish. So I think it's going to be interesting, and I'm going to track it a little bit more again this year, Hal, is I'm going to try and see how the 20 that get their card do. Obviously, we've got more exemptions too. We didn't even touch on the fact that, like, the university points list, those guys are getting cards on various tours as well.
Well, that is a way for a guy to get out there. They're playing a lot of college golf at very high levels. And I will say this, those guys are more prepared to win when they get out there. So I think that's a good thing that they've actually got guys earning their card through their college play. But anyway, tough to get established out there.
lots of avenues, lots of exemptions. It feels like that maybe the pressure is when you get your shot, there's the pressure to make the most of it because you might not get another one.
That pressure's always been there, Mark. Way back in 1982, it was there.
And our final event is on the Champions Tour up the road from me in Cary, North Carolina. We have the SAS Championship won by Jerry Kelly last year. And Jerry Kelly has one win in 2025 and sits 15th in the points this year. One more shout out to our sponsor, Makefield Putters. Hal and I are both using the Makefield Putters. And I mean, again, made in the USA. That's one of the big things. All of the different brand styles that you can choose from, center shaft, shaft lengths, the different weights. The key thing, man, the technology, that radial cusp technology helps you get the equator strike, gets that ball rolling. Hal's got the Arkansas logo on his. I got Greeny on mine. Make sure that, you know, Hal, we go out to makefieldgolf.com and get fit for your putter, man. You know, you and I never got fit for anything back in the day, but we get fit for everything now.
Yeah, that you know, we're pretty technical in the world we live in today. You know, you haven't mentioned it yet, but got a lot of different necks on the putter too. You know, I've got a plumber's neck on mine. So anyway, great putter. Go check it out.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for Be the Right Club today for this week. And Hal, I'll check back with you in 2 weeks. Todd Burrell will be back on with me next week. So make sure that you join us every week right here for Be the Right Club Today podcast.
Thank you for listening to Be the Right Club Today with your host, Hal Sutton and Mark Greenhalgh. Presented by Makefield Putters.